Hello and welcome to the Talking Locks with Lockitude podcast. My name is Ade Balogun, and today with me I have Prometheus in the chair or on the chair, and we're going to be having another chair convo series. Prometheus, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, it's been a couple of years, right? Or a year and a half?
About a year and a half, yep.
About a year and a half since you found me. So Let's start with, why did you decide to get locks in the first place?
So I moved here to the DMV area about 9 years ago. And I've always, you know, had my hair permed. And it was just very difficult to find someone to do my hair consistently. Okay. Because I don't like to go from stylist to stylist. I like to be consistent and stay with the one person that I'm with. And in the DMV, you know, most women are natural.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So my hair has always been very long. It was to my shoulders when I first got here.
But it was a perm.
It was a perm, right. And so finally I just said, I'm going to cut it all off and let it grow out. So I started wearing braids. I wore braids for about 2 years with no perm. And then I cut all the perm out. And it was about 2 inches long. And I just continued to wear braids. And then finally I was like, I'm going to just get locks.
So did it feel like the environment is what actually made you go natural?
So in my family, I have a long line of women that are locked. Mm-hmm. And their hair has been locked for 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought it was so beautiful, but I was just very scared to do it.
And where was the fear coming from? Was it acceptance, work, or just how it looked?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always admired it. I've always thought that locks were really beautiful. It was more, once you do it, this is final.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, am I going to stick to it type of situation.
And so now it's almost been 2 years. Mm-hmm. How do you feel?
I wish I would have done it sooner. I love it. I love it. Love it.
Okay. So, well, for those listening, Prometheus has micro locks, I think over 200, somewhere between 200 and 250.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thereabouts. So she's one of my outlier clients because I don't really do the tiny ones. Okay. So, let's see. How did you find me?
I had been searching, like asking one of my colleagues, her boyfriend went to you.
Nick.
And you were underneath their building.
Yeah.
And he spoke very highly of you, how you were so good. And I was like, I can't get in. She's booked. And so finally I was able to get in. And the rest is history.
Well, I'm happy you found me, and I think it's been a pleasure knowing you.
Awesome.
So far, I moved.
Yes.
From Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
All the way to Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you just said that you like to stick with one person to do your hair, but Sure. Is that drive worth it?
Absolutely.
Usually it takes about an hour to an hour and a half.
Yeah. If you weren't, I wouldn't take the drive, but I can't see anybody else doing my hair. Like, I just cannot. I cannot.
Okay. One of the favorite things I've learned about you in the past year and a half is that you're married to a Nigerian.
Mm-hmm.
So you've become our Nigerian sister. So how did this Nigerian brother sweep you off your feet?
So my husband and I actually met online. And our stories are, I was a single mom who my son did not know or have any communication with his biological father. And my husband was a single dad of a boy who did not know his mother and have any communication with his biological mother. And it was really funny how our children would say separately that my son wanted a dad, his son wanted a mom. And so we dated, but we never let the children meet each other until we decided to get married.
Okay.
He said that he knew before I did, because at first I was like, I don't know. But...
Yeah. Well, I know the Nigerian men know how to.
Very persistent.
Yep.
I would tell him all the time, you are too pushy. Well, just very persistent. Yes.
That's how we do. Mm-hmm. Okay, and being an African American married to, did your husband grow up in Nigeria? Did he grow up here?
Yes, he grew up in Nigeria.
So the culture, there's a lot of cultural differences, I presume.
Sure, yeah.
What is one of the things, or what are some of the things that surprised you about the Nigerian culture that you started to learn when you married a Nigerian?
Sure. Well, for one thing, there is a lot of, it is, I don't want to say taboo, but Americans are often afraid of Nigerians, and Nigerians are afraid of Black American women.
And men.
But, and men, right.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, even though our cultures are different, our cultures are very similar.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that we do are deeply rooted into, I believe, our African roots. But there are some differences. When you have an event, the whole village has to come. So if it's 500 people, it's 500 people. There's no such thing as no one is not invited.
Yeah.
So that is different.
Or like an invitation.
Sure. It's just
an
open.
Actual invitation. It's just like you just send out the flyer, yes, and everybody can, yes, come. No RSVP, nothing required.
Nothing. So I've gone to many times. My husband has been going to a baby naming ceremony, and I'm like, well, whose baby is it? I don't know.
So why are you going?
Why are we going to this event? But, you know, yeah. Just.
Okay. All right. What about the food? Have you learned how to cook any Nigerian food?
Yes.
Okay. Which ones have you learned?
Have I learned how? Oh, gosh. Jollof rice is just the staple, I think, in every home. Mm-hmm. My husband is a really good cook, so he cooks alongside me.
Okay.
But I think I like everything. I do not eat gari. It's just, I don't like it.
The eba, or drinking it, or
mixing
it with beans. Gari has, you know, no versatility.
It, to me, it's just like, it's a filler to fill up your stomach.
Yeah, but just call it cassava flakes.
I don't like it at all. I can't get into that. But everything.
Okay, so you eat
the spices are a little bit too much for me. Like, we have to do just two peppers. My husband comes from, like, doing 5 or 6.
Yeah, 7.
And I feel like that's death. But that's one of the differences that we, like, I can't. Okay. The spices a lot.
How has your kid embraced the blended family, mm-hmm, and the food and all of that?
Sure. So when my husband and I got married, my son was 13. Mm-hmm. He's 17 now. So he's a teenager, and teenagers are just on their own. Like, he doesn't want to be bothered. But when he was 13, he wanted all of the Nigerian food, just everything. So now he's just a teenager, and sometimes you don't like teenagers. So,
yeah. And how did the kids get along?
So their age difference is, our youngest son, Olamide, is 12 and Trenton is 17. So they tolerate each other, but because their age difference is so big, it's like, right, you know, this is my brother, but stay out of my room type of situation, you know? So,
yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. And congratulations, your son is graduating on Monday.
Yes.
From high school.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Excited much?
Yes, I am excited.
Has he been accepted into college?
Yes, he's going to be going to St. Vincent in Latrobe, Pennsylvania.
Congratulations.
And he's also going to be playing football there too.
So is there a graduation party?
Yes, tomorrow.
Know, I have to invite myself.
Yes. Yep.
Yep. Culturally, since I know I'm obligated to be there now.
Yeah.
Have you been to Nigeria yet?
I have not. Our plan is to go. I want to go for Christmas.
That's a good time to go.
Yeah. I want to go for Christmas.
You should buy your tickets now.
Mm-hmm.
If not, it'll probably become an affordable cruise.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So now is the time to buy your tickets if you want to do December this year, mm-hmm, at the very least. All right. And how have you enjoyed the Nigerian parties so far? The culture, the spraying of the money? The lavishness.
I think the lavishness is really nice to see. Spraying of the money is also very nice to see. African time drives me insane. And I think I will probably never get used to that.
You always get to the parties hours at to end.
So, yeah.
On time, but hours to end.
Correct. Typically, I'll go to the party and I have to help set up because no one is there. We had a baby shower that we were invited to.
Did you know the person who was having
Yes.
Okay.
We knew that.
This,
we knew
this
that.
One you knew.
And okay. It's supposed to start at 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that
I said,
meant, like,
oh, we'll go like 6. No, they didn't get there until almost 10.
Okay. I was so, super late.
Like, yeah.
I was super late. So what's it like being a teacher in America? And you said you moved to this area 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. So have you always been a teacher?
Yes.
Okay. Did you always want to be a teacher? Or
yes.
Was this something that happened?
I always wanted to be a teacher. So I want to be a teacher. When I retire, I want to be a nurse. But I want to be a hospice nurse. Is what's my dream.
Okay.
Is to do.
That's a very thoughtful and caring line of work.
I like to take care of people. And I think to be able to take care of someone at their end of life, to make life comfortable for them, is something that I would really love to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you have to go to school to be able to do that?
Yes.
Do you have plans yet?
I have not. I don't have plans. I don't know if I would be an RN, maybe like a nurse's assistant, because I don't know if I want to go through the whole process of going to school all over. That's just something that I really.
All right. That's very, very,
I've
very
always wanted to do.
Thoughtful. Did you grow up with siblings?
Yes, I have a younger brother.
Okay. Just one, just two of you.
Mm-hmm.
Thought you would have had more. Maybe you've been like the mother hen for a very long time, which is why I don't want to sound like I'm a horrible person if I say I don't like to take care of people.
Right. No.
But
that's
I'm going to take care of you out of necessity.
Sure.
I will pay for the hospice nurse to be there with you. I would make sure you don't lack anything. But as much as
that's the hardest part is paying for it.
Right. You know what I mean? What grade do you teach right now?
Third
grade. What age is that? I'm usually
eight,
very
between
confused.
8 and 9.
All right. And how's that going? They kind of can be kind of unruly.
So this is the perfect age. They
that.
Do have an opinion.
Yeah.
They definitely do have an opinion. And you do have to like bring them back down to life. But this is the age where they do have an opinion. They are curious. They know how they feel. And they can take directions very well. And they also, although they have like little attitudes, they also want hugs. They want to be baby, you know, like they're still on the cusp of being
a preteen.
Yeah.
You're not really a child anymore and you're not really an adult
yet.
Sure,
sure.
Or a teenager yet at least.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And have you always taught around that 8th grade or have you done different things through your career?
I've done different things. I've taught pre-K 4, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and I've been a reading coach as well.
Okay. And this one's the best?
Yes, I like this the best.
When they're too little, it's too much?
I'm older now. So to have the younger ones now, I think I have less patience. Because they do require a lot.
Mm, I can only imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So we connected on podcast the last time you were here, or I think a few times ago.
Yeah.
And I introduced you to the Morbid podcast. And today you're on my podcast. So, hey, look at that.
Yeah.
So what intrigues you about true crime?
I never thought that I was intrigued. But just listening to the podcast here, getting my hair done, I was like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. And so when I have some time, I like to listen.
Mm-hmm.
I just like the way they tell stories.
Yeah. I really like this girl's Ashton and Alina, I think. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's following the story and sometimes trying to guess who did it. on those episodes where it's not kind of clear outright who did it. Like, it's the father. No, it's the mother.
Yeah.
And there's always a twist. And they go into so much detail as to the lives of sometimes the victims and even the background of the killers themselves.
Yes.
So highly recommended. I think it's topping the charts wherever you listen to your podcast. And I really do enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take it back to your hair for a second. Why did you choose to get the relatively smaller locks? Were you going for sister locks? Was that what you were going for?
I thought sister locks was too small. I thought they were way too small. I wanted something small, but not too small, because I know that just with researching it and seeing it, when you got them and your locks matured, they would swell. So I didn't want them to be really, really big. And so I thought the micro locks was the best option. And I was right. I like the size of them. Now that they are mature, I don't think they're going to get any thicker than what they are.
Yeah, I don't think so, too. I think we're at that mature stage already. It's just going to get longer from here. And they have more options to style as well. Oh, that's cool. All right. What hobbies do you have? So you teach, you take care of people. You have any?
You listen to Morbid when you have a time. That's probably what I'm doing now. Reading was my really big hobby, but I haven't really had time now that I'm a wife and a mom. But my first love, I love to take care of people. And I think food is my love language. So I like to feed people. So I just like to cook and feed people.
I feel like you've given me several invitations to come to your house, like just in this conversation. There's a graduation party coming up. You like to cook. Mm-hmm. You like to feed people. I don't like to do any of those things. So I could possibly become that one person.
Yeah.
Still speaking about your hair, though, I remember the first time you started your locks. What was that experience like?
I had really researched it, but I started with someone different, and it was definitely a different experience. I'll just leave that there. I'm grateful that the loctician that did my hair went on maternity leave. And that's
what prompted
me to look for someone else. And I'm glad that I did.
Is there anything, if someone else was trying to get locks out there, is there anything you wish you knew before you started that you know now that you would like to share?
I don't think there's anything that I wish I knew other than trust the process, and everyone's hair is different.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't allow anyone to tell me what I can and cannot do to my hair. Like, some people tell you not to put conditioner, not to wash it, but every 3 weeks or something, you know. I think everyone's hair is different, and just trust the process.
Yeah, I like to say that the only rule is that there are no rules.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
You know, so just do what your hair needs and what you need as a person, because everybody's indeed different and everybody's hair reacts differently to the different processes, methods, products. It's interesting. And I would say find somebody who is vested in caring for your hair so that it progresses along the best possible path that it can.
I agree.
Yeah. The school system in the U.S., I know you've only thoughts here. Do you, with the way the kids grew up, is technology part of the curriculum in terms of the 8-year-olds that you teach? Do they have to use a device for every subject that they do? How has it been different over the last few years, over the many years that you've taught? Because I'm sure you went from paper and pencil and color and crayon to potentially using a computer for almost everything. Mm-hmm. is learning how to write with your hand as important as it used to be?
I think that it is important. This is my 23rd year teaching students, and I think that we rely too much on technology. Now, I wish that we didn't rely on it as much as we do, because a lot of fine motor skills that students need comes from taking a pencil and writing on paper. You know, that's why most students cannot write in cursive or even read in cursive, because it's not something that we utilize, because so
it's not part of the curriculum anymore.
Correct. And I think that that is unfortunate for
really?
Our kids.
So you don't have to do any handwriting anymore?
So I try to incorporate writing, paper, pencil writing all the time in everything they do, because everything is on the computer and I'm still old school. So some teachers don't use paper, pencil at all. Everything is on the computer. I think that some things need to be on the computer, but they still need to be able to have access to paper and pencil.
I watched something on Netflix that was futuristic, and it was a foreign language. Of course, I watched it in English. I think I watched a voiceover with English on it, but it was definitely from like a European country.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so technologically advanced and way into the future, where we relied on robots to do everything for us.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody came who could read a book. Like somebody was in the act who could read an actual book.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was surprised. They're like, why would you know how to do that?
Mm.
And I did not imagine a time where it wouldn't be necessary. But with everything we're seeing right now, I think it can go by without, if you don't need to, if we get to a point where you have special advanced glasses and then you look at a screen and it reads it to your head, you don't necessarily have to know how
to read it. Absolutely.
Yeah, you don't have to know how to read it.
I agree.
Oof, that's a scary future, because I think there's going to be some equivalent of like a nice age where everything's going to shut down.
Sure.
When we're the most dependent on it, and then the skills from the old times. And we might be long gone before that happens.
Sure, sure.
But it's an interesting future to imagine. I think there's probably movies mm-hmm. about what that looks like.
I agree. If you think about how we rely on our cell phones and our smartwatches so much now. Mm-hmm. When I was in undergrad in college, a cell phone was not something that you had. You had a pager, but you didn't use a cell phone. You actually spoke and communicated with people. Like now, you don't have to. And I think it's scary, even with children. They don't have to go outside and learn how to kick a ball and run and play, because they have these devices that they use all the time.
You know, I do hear for some kids, and sometimes I see like what they're up to on their devices while I'm doing their hair. And the one that intrigues me the most, I don't know what it's called, I think there's a name for it, is when you watch other people watching something. It's the most
weird
thing I've found. Like, I'm just like, why?
My youngest son does that.
So you're watching, so you might be watching somebody playing a game, or you might be watching somebody watching a concert. Mm-hmm. So you're not watching the concert anymore. You're watching people mm-hmm. engaging in that activity. I'm like, I was like, why are you watching them watch it? Why don't you just watch what they're watching? Yeah. And they're like, no. Watching other people is part of the
trend, I guess. And it is true.
And people record those videos and they have millions of views.
And they make lots
it's
of
so
money.
Confusing. I need to speak to somebody in the Gen Z generation to understand what the thrill is and why it becomes more interesting to watch somebody else watch. Like, not somebody else do the activity. Mm-hmm. Watch them watch.
Sure.
Somebody else do the activity. Do you have any idea why that is?
I just think that we are in the age of technology, and we've gotten away from actually doing things as a society. Like, even when I was growing up as a child, we wanted to go outside and play. Children now don't want to go outside and play. They want to play their video games or watch other people doing things. And I think it has become addictive. Devices have become addictive. I am guilty of the same thing. Like, I couldn't imagine going a day without my phone. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, other than I'm addicted to it because I didn't always have a phone.
Yeah. Funny story. So I use an iPhone, and my iPhone has been giving me some trouble lately. And I've thought to myself, I'm just going to wait till September when the new one comes out, mm-hmm. because there's no point changing it in June. Mm-hmm. And then a new phone comes out in September. So I'm like, it's a do or die affair. I'm going to use you until September, whether you like it or not. So my phone zooms out and I can't turn it on, turn it off. I can't do anything on it. I went somewhere I didn't usually go and I couldn't find my way back home.
Mm.
And so I couldn't navigate anything on my phone. I plugged this into the car system to see if Apple CarPlay will come up so I can, you know, use the car. But that wasn't working because it required me to open my phone. And I tried so many times. So it had locked and the face identification thing wasn't working. So all of a sudden, I was stuck. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to get on the highway and read the signs to know where I'm going.
Mm.
Then I remembered I have a watch. Mm-hmm. So I talked to Siri on my watch and my watch took me home.
Wow.
But it was like, oh my God, what would have been the alternative? And America is not even set up in a way where you or at least this area is not set up in a way where you can make a stop and ask somebody, how do I get on?
But we used to. It used to be a time that there wasn't.
That's how you found your way.
You found your way by stopping at the gas station and asking someone and reading the signs of this is where I need to be.
Yeah. I was even so bad that I wasn't sure.
Yikes. That's scary.
I was like, if I'm still going to ask somebody, I'm going to ask them, how do I get to Leesburg Pike? But how do I even know what side of Leesburg Pike I'm going to? I was just like, oh God. But anyway, my phone saved me in that situation. But that's how dependent on technology mm-hmm. that we have become.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from what you're saying, if it's highly used in the education system and using hand and your hand, a paper, a pen or a pencil is optional, then it's a future that inevitably wouldn't exist without. But do you also think that, can imagine in, I don't know, maybe whenever cars start becoming a thing and everybody moved around in a horse and carriage and mm-hmm. people are like, oh, I'm sure there must have been things people would have said about cars. They were too expensive. Not everybody would have them. It was for a certain class. But generally, they've made our lives better. So maybe the tech is just going to continue to improve our lives. And the horse and carriage would never be a thing. It would be like in a museum, or you could go to a head as a colonial Williamsburg
mm-hmm.
where you can experience things like that. So maybe there would be places you can go to where you can experience being in a car, because in the future, you just use your hologram to travel
mm-hmm.
to Everest as opposed to go or get on a plane.
That's true.
I have a... sometimes my imagination runs very wild with these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that travel in the future might, with virtual reality and neurons and them kind of building neurons that kind of attach to your head so you can feel things, you can move things. So I'm thinking in the future, how you travel is you might go to the airport, get on a plane, and they might just put some gas in the space and mm-hmm. put headsets on everybody's head. Your brain won't be able to tell the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you fell asleep on the plane and you wake up and yeah. you might have the whole experience of coming off a plane, you know, going into the wild, being in a safari, and you are basically, and you could pay for a 2-week package, and it just connects stuff to you to make sure that you're fed by IV and your waste is collected.
Wow.
And then you wake up while the plane is landing. Wow. And you feel like you've gone somewhere, but you've actually been sitting in one spot for 2 weeks. I feel like there's a future like that ahead of us. But don't mind me. This is my imagination. Running wild. Which of the animals?
Any of them.
They will continue to exist as they do. Wow.
And they'll adapt.
They'll actually... Which of the animals, though? Because the animals in the wild will be fine.
Sure.
And they'll just continue.
Will there be a wild?
If we've killed everything to be able to build whatever.
If we're going to use, everything's going to be gone.
I don't know. Oh, anyway, wow. This is my imagination just running wild. Just really running wild. I hope.
It's a possibility.
I love to travel. And sure. I don't even know what made me start to think this way. But I was like, what if every time you get on a plane, someone just gasses you out and you think you've gone somewhere, but you've literally been sitting there for some time. Wow. I was like, that is not impossible. That could be like some classified government secrets. Nobody knows. Am I living in the Matrix? But yeah.
I agree. Wow. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. That's hopefully
that
doesn't happen.
That would be a good movie.
Yeah. If it hasn't been made already, you'd be surprised.
Interesting.
Somebody maybe made it. Maybe I watched something and that's where I got it from. I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, so having a teenage son and navigating technology and having a 13 year old as well, what are the ways you try to have a sense of balance with the tech, with the pace that the world is moving? Is there balance, or is it a lost cause? You just have to, if you can't beat them, you join them.
I am not tech savvy like my children are at all. So when I need something, of course, they have to be the one to help me navigate it. Our oldest son, Trenton, didn't have as much technology available to him as our younger son, Olamide. So that is a good thing that he was able to be a child when he needed to be a child. And it wasn't so much technology. So with our younger son, we do notice that he is addicted and has addictive like personalities with that technology. We will have to make him eat. So we limit his device usage during the school week. He's not allowed to use any video games or technology other than just the regular TV.
So no video games?
No, not during the school week.
No iPad?
No. Now during the summer.
No cell phone?
Nothing. Not during the school week.
So you only get your device on the weekend?
Sure.
But don't kids take devices
to
school?
So he does have his cell phone, but like you're not going to just be able to be home from school with it playing video games all day. So when you come home from school, it goes on the dresser. And when we didn't limit his usage, we could definitely notice that he was addicted. Like he wasn't going to sleep at night. He wasn't getting enough sleep. You would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to use the bathroom. And he'd be literally in the closet hiding with his iPad. And so we knew that that was a problem and we had to address it. So we had to take it away to limit some time. And so even like during the weekend when he has his device, we give him time on and give him time off. So if you've been on it for 3 hours, you have to come off for an hour.
Right. And what about during the summer?
We still make him, you're on for a couple of hours and you have to come off. And then we put him in other activities so that he is not just wanting to be on the game.
Yeah. So I don't have any kids yet, but I noticed that here it's very common and popular for parents to put their kids in so many activities. And I think it's supposed to be help. I don't know for a fact. I assume that it's supposed to help them be competitive, to get into good colleges, to set them up for a good future. But from my background, which is kind of like the opposite, where education, at least the time I was growing up, education was prioritized over sports. Mm-hmm. African parents generally feel like sports, music, and all those extracurricular activities are a waste of time. Become a doctor, lawyer, engineer. I believe that's changing now with millennial parents. But that used to be the thing. What's your opinion on that? Is there a balance? And having kids yourself, do they, like, some kids, I feel like meeting them, the time they get to do their hair is in between, like, football practice and piano practice and swimming lessons and all of this. Is that just, some people, or in the public school system, is that common for mm-hmm. parents to be so competitive with sure. their kids' extracurricular Everything. Activities?
It is. I don't agree with having them have every part of their day taken away for something extra. If they're interested in a sport or something extra that they want to do, we'll do it. Like, our youngest son does swimming. And that's what he does once a week. I think that you can put so much on a child. They need to just learn how to play. And kids don't know how to play. And they don't know how to play because they have tennis on Tuesday and swimming on Wednesday and soccer. Like, it's something every single day. And they need to just be able to play. And that is the reason why we have so many adults that are broken, because they were never able to develop and just play and be kids. Mm. You don't know how to tell somebody, I don't like it when you do that to me, because you've never had to, you know? And I think that they should just be able to play and get dirty and fall down and get hurt and go outside and collect some bugs and, you know, do what kids are supposed to do.
Yeah, I completely agree. Do you have to deal, I guess this is a rhetorical question. Is that the right word? I don't know. I think I need coffee this morning. I haven't quite woken up yet. Where you have difficult parents, mm-hmm. like how does it feel with all these years and the experience you have? Have you ever encountered parents that, or does teaching feel like you also have to teach the parents too? Mm-hmm. What's that like?
I think that the parents have gotten more disrespectful mm-hmm. than ever before. I often feel like the hired help mm-hmm. and not as a professional. And I oftentimes have to tell my parents that I have multiple degrees. And as a teacher, I feel like we are the most disrespected profession. I had to tell a parent just recently, you know, I don't go to my doctor and tell my doctor what tool they need to use at a visit, because my doctor is a professional. I'm either going to listen to the advice that my doctor gives me and seek a second opinion, but I'm never going to go in and, for example, go into your office and tell you that your business plan that you're using is incorrect.
Yeah.
And I think we as teachers have to deal with that quite often, because most people that can't teach like to tell people that do, that can, what to do. But yes, I definitely have had my share of disrespectful parents.
Yeah. And being a parent and a teacher, mm-hmm. where does teaching start and stop? And what's more important? So in my opinion and in my mind, a teacher in the school is supposed to teach my child on mostly academic stuff.
Sure.
When it comes to morality, respect, and things like that, I personally think those things should come from home.
Absolutely.
And is a reflective of the day-to-day life. But the kids spend so much time in school. Mm-hmm. And you have many families with working moms, but not just working moms, both parents mm-hmm. working several hours to make ends meet. And hardly do you have the time to even have a nanny. So your child is not necessarily always in the home environment. They end up being in some sort of system.
Mm-hmm.
So where does teaching start? Where does it stop? Where does the responsibility of the teacher start and stop? What are you responsible for legally as a teacher?
Well, first of all, I think the parent is always the first teacher of a child. Like, you are the first teacher of your child automatically. I do believe that students often spend more time at school with their teachers than they do at home. That's just what it is. It should be a village type of situation, but oftentimes it is not. It should be. Like, it should be all hands on deck when it comes to raising children, and it should be all stakeholders are involved, but it's not. I think that for me, I do both. It is my goal when I'm teaching kids to have them leave me better than they come to me. Mm-hmm. And that's because I do care about what I do, and I'm passionate about my business of educating children. You do have to be careful when it comes to morality,
because it means different things to different families.
Absolutely. Some families it's different. And so I just believe in teaching my students how to be kind and what kindness looks like and feels like. And it starts with how I speak to them. I speak to them the way I want them to speak to me.
Yeah.
I don't answer them what, because you're not going to answer me what.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that translates to even adult relationships and partnerships where mm-hmm. you cannot expect respect if you are not ready to give it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I can imagine that through your career, you may have experienced kids with psychological challenges.
Sure.
And how is that treated in the space? And I know that mental health can be challenging.
Sure.
And sometimes difficult to identify, because you might have an unruly kid that has mental health issues.
Sure.
And is not just being unruly.
Sure.
So over the years, are there strategies, systems in place in school, or do we even have a case whereby the system is misdiagnosing kids, because you might just have an unruly child that
sure.
needs to be corrected and trained as opposed to
mm-hmm.
being on medication?
Sure.
What's that like in the system that you're in?
So I'm a public school teacher,
mm-hmm.
and the concept of public school education is amazing, right? The thing about public education is, as great as it is, it's public. And so we get what we get, and we have to use the resources that we have to address the issues that we have.
Mm.
For me, I think the first thing is the relationship that you build with students. Because at the end of the day, kids don't care what you want to teach them until they know that you care about them. So it has to start with the relationship that you build with them. So once you build a relationship with them and they know what is what, it can pretty much be whatever it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I have behavior problems, but because I know that Mrs. LaWall cares about me, I'm going to, instead of throwing this chair and this table, I'm going to tell her that I need a moment to myself. And that is because we build a relationship and they feel safe enough to say to me, I need some time.
As opposed to acting out.
Exactly.
And then it becomes ugly and all of that.
Absolutely. And oftentimes kids misbehave because there's something that they need. And mm-hmm. that something is avoidance. If I don't understand the curriculum that is being taught to me, I am below grade level, I'm going to misbehave more than I would if I understood.
So there's a lot of root cause analysis going on for the teachers, because you need to kind of understand what each student needs and what's the teacher to student or pupil ratio in the school system.
There's always supposed to be one, but it's not really one. It is just you teach and just deal with what you have type of situation.
Is there usually enough time for the kids?
Enough time?
For like each of your kids individually? Like
it's never enough time.
It's never enough time.
Mm-mm, no.
Are your kids in the public system or in the private system?
Public.
Do you have a preference?
For me personally, I like public just because I do. I think that you have some great teachers in the public school system, whereas a private school system, you are paying for what you want, you know? Mm-hmm. And in the private school system, they are allowed to pick and choose who they want.
Right.
Whereas in the public school system, we have to take little Johnny, even though little Johnny is 3 grade levels below. And he has been diagnosed with autism and he may be a paranoid schizophrenic. You still have to take Johnny.
Right.
So all is welcome under the tent in the public school system.
Right. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I had something on the top of my head. ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a new sickness.
It's not.
Is it real?
It's real. It's a real sickness. It's not a new sickness. It is an old sickness that has been around for a while. The difference is there used to be a time that students could be disciplined in school. Parents were older that had children. Parents are now younger. And because we're in a technology age, parents don't really discipline or talk to their children. They just give them an iPad and let them go.
Put a device in front of them.
Sure. And all that screen time, it does affect a lot of your brain. If you notice, if you're on your phone before you go to bed, you have trouble sleeping. I think ADHD is a real thing that students struggle with. People in general struggle with it. Our youngest son has ADHD. And it's a real thing. It's a real thing.
Someone was trying to convince me the other day that I had ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, I'm just scattered. And I'm scattered for some things. I'm not scattered for some things. You know, I might forget, like, I might have to go back into the house 3 times before I start my day because I forgot my phone, I forgot the keys, I forgot this, I forgot that. But that's just because I wasn't prepared. That's what I feel.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, because if I prepared, if I had thought about it, I wouldn't have to go back 3 times.
Sure.
But someone was trying to convince me that, you might have problems.
You may. So,
hopefully not. I don't think so.
But even if you do, you've learned how to live and you've learned how to cope with whatever it is that you have. You know, when we were growing up, we didn't say that kids had autism or kids had ADHD. If you misbehave or you had executive functioning issues at home as a kid, which you couldn't keep your stuff organized, your parents would just spank you.
Yes.
And you knew, I'm not coming home without having this stuff that my teacher told me to have. You know?
Because I'll get spanked.
Yeah. Which could very well mean that you have an executive functioning issue. But it worked because guess what? You did not want what your parents were going to give you if you didn't bring that stuff home. Whereas now, they're just going to...
So have we solved this problem, spank kids?
I think discipline is okay. I think discipline is okay and it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's necessary when it's done. When it is appropriate, it should not be
abusive.
The first thing, correct. And it doesn't have to be, discipline doesn't have to be a spanking all the time. It could be, I'm taking something away from you that you want.
Yeah. I actually didn't get hit a lot as a child
mm-hmm.
by my parents. However, I went to a boarding house at the age of 8, 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of like, well, almost everybody's in the system. But it was a paramilitary boarding house.
Mm.
It was, at the time, my country was under military dictatorship. It was run by the military. It was basically a school owned and run by the military.
Oof.
And there were rules.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to keep up to it. You had to be at the same place at the same time. No excuses. There was all sorts. And that was when I was the most disciplined. And I actually think, I personally think, as opposed to a more Western opinion, that those years in that establishment shaped who I am and defined the perseverance I have today and my approach to things and knowing when something needs to get done, I can actually focus to get it done because I know what it feels like to be organized and disciplined and operate from a place of discipline. So do in your experience so far with kids, and if you don't want to talk about this, that's okay, but does the medication help? Is Adderall helping, or is it
So for my own son, I don't believe in medicine unless it is a severe case. I don't think just because you have ADHD you need medicine. You need to just know that you have a diagnosis. This is what it is. So now that I know that I have it, let me put something in place. And something in place means I'm going to put my stuff out before I go to bed.
Exactly. Because that if I do that, I don't forget stuff.
Correct. So that is something that you could use as opposed to taking medicine. Because I don't think that everybody needs medicine. I don't think my child needs medicine. I won't give him medicine. Now that we know what it is, we know the steps that we need to take to make sure that he is organized at school. He has the things that are necessary for him so that he won't lose his things. He won't be scattered all over the place with his stuff. And we just, you know, give him the supports
that he needs.
That he needs so he doesn't have to have medication.
Okay.
I agree with going to a very strict school and having order in place. If we didn't have laws, then what would happen? Yeah. It would be anarchy, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get to just go driving your car as fast as you want and not stop at the red lights or stop signs. What would happen?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there should be some order in order for us to be in a civilized society.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And I can imagine that might be difficult to achieve with the public system.
Sure.
Considering it takes account into a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And Maryland is where you teach, right?
I teach in D.C.
Oh, you teach in D.C. Is, I think I heard, I don't know if I'm right, but, you know, what some of the things I've heard about Maryland, I don't know if it's the same as in D.C., is that if a child wanted to become transgender, they didn't even need to, the school didn't have to inform the parents before they start to lead the child or assist the child down that.
I hear people say that all the time. I've never heard that you could lead someone down the road of being transgender. If a parent has come to the school and said, you know, my child identifies as they're mm-hmm. non-binary, you would respect, you know what I mean? And just call the child they. I'm not saying that I agree with it because I feel like children are developing. Yes. And I think that they don't know what they want to be. They might want to be a unicorn.
Almost 40. I don't even know what
I'm. Sure. So like kids don't really know. We definitely, the schools don't make the decision. The parents make the decision of what happens with their kids. But we do, as young as elementary school, we have students that are transitioning. So a girl would be
as elementary school.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that a mistake? I know you don't make the laws, but I'm just like, how old is elementary school?
They start as early as, we have some kids that are 3 in the 3-year-old program, and they go up to 5th grade is 10 years old. So it's very, very young.
So, okay, that's kind of like the equivalent of primary school in Nigeria. And you allow a child who is 6 or 7 begin a process of a decision, a major decision, when they can't even drink, drive?
Sure. I agree. That's exactly what it is. For me personally, I feel that as an adult, you should be able to make the decision that you want. If you choose to transition into you don't identify as anything, that is a decision that you have made as an adult. I do not feel that everything needs to be put on children. I think that they need to be children, and we need to allow children to be children.
Yeah.
And stop over-sexualizing our kids.
Mm. And I understand, and DC is one of those,
Very liberal.
Do you call it?
Liberal.
Yeah, it's liberal, and they say something else about DC taxation without representation.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't even know where to ask the questions from. Is there any hope, or is just the liberality of the states just what it is? So people are just going to have to do what they want to do without being reasonable.
Yeah. And for me,
well, points. I just should say this at this point. I do have nothing against transgender, the LGBTQ movement, but like certainly think somebody who is not allowed to drink, drive, have sex legally should not be allowed to make that sort of major transition. Like, even if you identify, I think the transitioning is like the...
That's the scary part.
Yeah, because you, growing up, with all the technology and where we are now, you have... girls will often be tomboys growing up and wear boys' clothes because they want to. And then sometimes they become more feminine or identify as being more feminine as they grow up. And sometimes it's actually even about being ashamed of your body and hiding your body. So you want to wear boys' clothes so your development isn't showing up that way. So I get it that you might feel a certain way, or you feel more drawn to the things that boys typically do or girls typically do both ways. So, of course, those feelings, I believe, are real.
Sure.
I have a first cousin who is very effeminate. You know, I don't know how he identifies today, but growing up in Nigeria, he's always been very effeminate. So if he kind of decided to transition as an adult, I probably would understand it because I grew up with him being very effeminate. So, I've gone on a rant of my own, but I was trying to ask a question. Is there anything that the school system or the states is doing or is working on to protect these children? Because at this point, I actually feel like allowing a child as young as 3 to 10 make such a major life decision is more of an abuse than protection.
I have not known of any children who have had surgeries or taken hormones. But when I say transition, they would change their name to fit
the gender
that they want to be, and they would just be considered that gender. I don't think that, so as far as the schools are concerned, the schools don't make the decisions. We don't make the decisions, especially at the public area, because we are federally funded. So we have to follow by the laws and rules that we are instructed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as an adult should be able to make whatever decision that they want. And I am all for respecting a person, feeling how they feel, because your feelings are your feelings. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so I think, you know, it is what it is. But I'm very skeptical when it does come to children. Like, that is really scary when you put certain things in the minds of children.
Yeah.
To encourage children to do things. Like, let them be children. And, you know, when they become adults, they'll make the decision based off of their adult self when they're fully developed.
Yeah, because it can change your mind. Some of the things you want right now are not the things I want. Some of the things I want right now may not be the things I want tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, this is America. It's the land of the free and the home of...
Mm-hmm.
the brave. So I guess we're all being brave and free for it all. All right. Have you been to any other countries yet?
I've been to the Caribbean a lot.
Okay.
I am planning to go to Nigeria, and I want to go to a couple countries in Africa, of course. And then I want to go to London.
Did you by any chance do the ancestry thing?
I have not.
Okay. All right. You're probably Nigerian anyway, everywhere. Well, the Caribbean, I've never been, but temperature-wise, I guess it should feel a little bit more like Nigeria.
Like home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wanted to give you some tips and tricks for when you go home.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun. Eat food. The food is real on the other side.
It's real. It tastes better.
It tastes better, and it's real. Wow. I feel like it's just real. Having grown up on the other side, you know how you get to the grocery store here and all of the food is very consistent?
Mm-hmm.
Our food doesn't look like that in the market. Mm. It's very inconsistent, except if you're buying the GMO stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. But the tomatoes all have different shapes and sizes as opposed to everything being almost even and perfect and engineered.
Mm-hmm.
So the food is real. It tastes better. It's good. There are a ton of... Are you going to be in Lagos, do you know?
Probably all over.
Okay.
But Ibadan is where my husband is from.
Yeah, I don't know much about the city of Ibadan. It's a few kilometers from Lagos. You could get there in about an hour. The roads are really good. I was in Nigeria in January.
Mm.
The roads are like, wow. Mm. Okay, that's between Lagos and Ibadan. But well, Lagos is my home,
mm-hmm.
home state and where I grew up. So let's just put out some word for Lagos there. The food is good. The beaches are good enough, but you should go to a beach. That should be fun. I like Takwa Bay personally.
Mm-hmm.
You get to it by boat.
Okay.
Like a 15-minute boat ride from mm-hmm. the island.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. It's the Atlantic feels more treacherous on that side than on this side.
Okay.
From my experience from the Virginia Beach, just felt like Virginia Beach was a lot calmer. The Atlantic on the other side is a bit more rough.
Mm.
So the bay is just the bay off the beach.
Mm-hmm.
So the waves are calmer. It's usually a nice hangout any day of the week. It's nice. There is, if you're interested in arts and crafts,
mm-hmm.
there's a market called the Jack on the Art Market where you can find stuff from paintings, for very affordable paintings. It will cost you more to frame the painting when you get to America than to buy the painting itself.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get some really nice art decor, wood carvings, if you want to carry that kind of stuff back home. But really interesting stuff. I would advise that you make sure that whatever you're buying, the wood is treated. Because it will be flagged by immigration on this side if it's not. So if you're interested in wood carvings, you can get nice beads. You could get some precious stones as well at that market, like birthstones that are mined up north in the country. Restaurants are great. If you're going to be there in December, there will be concerts.
Mm.
There will be concerts like every night of the week. Probably multiple in one night. You should go to one of those concerts and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Just have fun.
Yeah.
Enjoy the traffic. Enjoy the madness. We drive crazy.
I'm sure.
We drive crazy. And before I wrap up here, I would say a story that I shouldn't say. So I've been driving since I was 15. One of my older cousins, Tony, taught me how to drive when I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a license before I came to America. So to get a driver's license here, I had to take the whole program. Mm-hmm. If I did have a Nigerian license, I would have had to just flip it for an American one.
Mm-hmm.
But because I didn't have one, I had to go to driving school with the 15-year-old kids here and do everything from scratch, which was fun. But it was when I got here, I realized that you actually had to stop at a stop sign.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a suggestion.
Oh.
So I wonder why are you all stopping when there's nobody on the road? Just go. And they're like, no, you have to stop at a stop sign. I was like, even if there's nobody there, that doesn't make sense. But yeah, I stop at stop signs.
Stop, okay.
Yeah. ticket and stop at stop signs. But we drive crazy. We don't give way to traffic on your left when you're on the roundabout. It's just first come, first serve. We are nice people, always often screaming at each other, but this is just how we do. But it should be fun. You should have a lot of fun when you get up there.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Any final words before we wrap this up? Can you believe we've been talking for over an hour?
Wow.
All right. I guess we touched on a few things. We talked about the school system. We talked about how fabulous it is to be married to a Nigerian. Mm-hmm. you don't need medication for ADHD. You can cope with it.
Yep.
So it is real. So maybe, you know, I think it was just 2 days ago, actually, one of my clients was really trying to convince me that I had ADHD. And I was like, I guess I just didn't want to be sick.
Right, you don't have to be sick about it.
I don't have anything else. I'm perfect.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's more comforting hearing that, maybe I do, but at least I can cope with it. I get my work done. I can function.
Yeah. I'm
functioning.
Right.
High functioning potential ADHD patients. Yep. All right. This has been fun conversation. Thank you so much
of course.
We're probably going to listen to a Mavic podcast by the end of your hair appointment.
Nice.
I think I've been taking my time this morning, actually. I've been taking my time because I usually get this done. It has to be faster. I've been talking too much. I've probably been gesturing with my hands. So let's wrap it up. Thank you so much again, Prometheus. This has been the Talking Locks with Locksuit podcast. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. We stayed a little bit slow, but I think we got there and had meaningful conversations as always. And that is what the Chair Convo series is all about. I get to meet exciting clients that become my friends, and we have these great conversations during the hair appointment. So don't forget to follow us and like us. If it's likable wherever you listen to your podcast, we should be everywhere. Spotify, YouTube, Google. I think Google podcasts are going away and going to YouTube. Apple Podcast, Deezer, wherever you find your podcast, you find us. And don't forget to keep it locked with an attitude. Bye.